This is Shane Raymer from That Sober Guy Podcast, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle. And, you know, most people, whenever they hear static come over the airwaves, it kind of drives them nuts. But I personally love to hear this guy go and talk. And although we haven't met physically yet, I feel like I've got a new brother through the times we have talked. So without further ado, my friend Static, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, not much. I'm happy to be here, man. Yeah, we haven't met in person, but I feel like we definitely have talked enough to when that day comes, it's going to be like, oh, how's it going? Like we picked up where we left off. But yeah,
exactly.
And I'm not to be confused with the static that goes on your radio or your Wi-Fi or whatever.
Yeah, not to be confused with that at all, because like I said, man, just getting to know you, and every time well, we'll get into like where we met and how we've got to know each other and stuff, but just love hearing the wisdom and input that you have and the serenity that you bring so many others. But usually when I have somebody on for the first time, I like to get a little bit of a background. So originally, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Originally, what I wanted to be? I wanted to be an architect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is just funny because, you know, I did get the amazing experience to be a professional musician for most of my life. And there is that point where I said, yeah, I want to be a musician. That's what I want to do. But there's so many people that I guess wanted to be musicians that ended up architects. And I actually started out wanting to be the architect. And then I wanted to be a supercross racer and then musician once I picked up guitar. And then I followed through on that one.
Nice. So what was it, Legos when you were a kid, you know, building stuff and whatever?
Yeah. My father was a contractor. He's an engineer. He was an engineer too. He designed bridges, built houses. So I was always around it. So it just seemed like kind of flowing in that, but that kind of went away quick when I realized I couldn't really draw.
So then the music thing came in, and like, when was it, what do you remember? Like, what were some of the first music you remember hearing and being like, wow, I really like this. And this is something I want to get into.
I always loved music, and it is something I didn't know if I wanted to do it or not, but I have very vivid early memories of music. And I always talk about this because I did get a point where I work with kids, and I always ask, what's your first musical memory? And mine, I have two, was I Will Survive and Tragedy, because I'm born in 76. So you got to think like that was probably the hits that I was starting to hear on the radio in 1977. And then in the early 80s, I was obsessed with Michael Jackson, Prince, and Run DMC. And Run DMC did Walk This Way, and all of a sudden I saw the guitar in a video. And I'm like, Mom, check this out. This is Run DMC. She's like, that's Aerosmith. I'm like, what's Aerosmith? And then at that point, guitar became very much in my face. And my mom loved like great music, like Ozzy and Sabbath and all kinds of stuff was on the radio, and Zeppelin. And so by the time I was 10 years old, I was already like, you know, cassette tapes and patches on the denim jacket. And, you know, like a walking wannabe encyclopedia of, you know, it's funny, we call it classic rock history, but when I think about the year span of like me discovering Zeppelin in 85, like Zeppelin only stopped playing like 3 years prior. And then we think about, you know, calling it classic rock now, you're like, oh, that's like 50 years ago.
Nice. So, and then it's funny you mentioned I Will Survive. Remind me when we chat after to tell you a little story about that song that you just brought up. Then what led you to guitar and wanting to play guitar?
So once music became a thing, like, oh, I want to actually do this, not just like it, which is nothing wrong. I mean, one of the most important factors in the music industry is the fans, because without the fans, you're basically playing to no one. But once I transitioned from just loving music, I have a cousin. He played guitar around the house. My mom's brothers, there's always music around the house. But there's a combination of wanting to play guitar getting the song remains the same video from Led Zeppelin with Jimmy Page, just like on the mountain with the bow, and he's like the wizard, and you're just like, this is larger than life. And I think just friends too, like my best friend to this day, two of my best friends I'm still in touch with that we met in both third grade, were both playing guitar before me. So I was like, I want to play guitar too, but I didn't really pick it up till eighth grade. Cause I was really preoccupied with, riding dirt bikes. Like I was really into Supercross. So I had like a, you know, just riding around the woods, jumping off stuff. But I was like, I want to try guitar too. And then I just got a cheap $100 electric guitar and started learning guitar.
Nice. And then, so guitar started, and then like what led to like, now you're doing like, you know, running a studio and stuff like that. When did that cross over? Or was it like you playing guitar and then started playing in bands first, or?
Well, know? it was quick. So once I started playing guitar, like this is for me, this is like what I really want to do. And part of it too is, you know, when I was younger, I always felt a little weird. That's a funny way of saying it. I mean, everybody has their weird phase. And I always felt like a 4,000 year old alien in whatever body I was in at that time, you know, 6-year-old, 10-year-old. And I was the kid that was quiet early on, even though I'm not quiet now, that would just play with blocks or just do my own thing in the woods. And guitar, I felt like is the first time I felt freedom. I felt like a voice. So I started playing. I was like, this is awesome. So picked it up in eighth grade, but picked it up with the full intention to wanting to be in a band and like learning and doing the whole thing. It wasn't just like, I'm going to do this. So by high school, I was in bands playing a lot, and it's the early 90s. So you could get these like 4-track recorders that recorded the cassette tapes. I showed an interest in recording, and I always had like that duality to it. And in some of my early bands, I would be the one recording on the equipment, like, you know, the tape recorder type multi-track recorders. And then in my early 20s, when my focus was music, like I'm a guitar player in a band, we're playing in New York City, the whole thing, I ended up working in the recording department of the music store and learning all about that. But it was just like an extra skill set in love and knowledge. It wasn't till years later, because I'm 44 now, that when I decided to kind of transition and step back from the band I was in for 16 years, that I really wanted to go full focus on helping other people create and record their music. So that's why I had the studio now, which is a collection of most of the gear I've been buying since the 90s, which is kind of funny.
And then like, so what was one of your first bands?
Like in high school?
Yeah.
So
I love all the high school band names, you know.
I love this. This is the good stuff. This is the questions no one ever asks. This is the funny stuff. So the first band we put together, my best friend, all people I'm still friends with. So my friend Yanni, I mean he's Greek, but his name is John. Kolovos is on guitar, and my other lifelong friend Joe, he was on drums. And for a split second, I had enough influence to like let the band be named after a song from an obscure band that Yngwie Malmsteen was in, because I was unapologetic about my love of Yngwie when everybody else was not into shredding in the early 90s, even though I eventually did not become a great shredder. So we call it Hiroshima, because he has a song called Hiroshima More and More, was on the first Alcatraz record that Yngwie was on with Graham Bonnet. So I was like, that's when you're like a kid, you're so hyper-focused on all these little details and the super geek stuff. And I stole his intro and played Sakura on the guitar at Battle of the Bands. And no one gave us the memo that the 80s was dead. And the rest of the Battle of the Bands in high school was filled with like people on the cutting edge of like doing what Nirvana and Pearl Jam were doing, and the kids doing the Zep thing. And we came out like with tight jeans and boots, and we just didn't, no one gave us the memo. We were the freshmen that no one said the 80s was over, and we were like covering like, you know, the Scorpions, Van Halen, Iron Maiden, like all the stuff you'd be super excited about. And it's, everyone's looking at us and it's like, oh, okay.
But the parents out there are probably like, yes.
not in the early 90s, because that would have been my older cousins came, who got me into music, and that's why I like that stuff. And they were only in their, like, to this day, they're only 53 years old now. So 1991, the parents were still looking for the Beatles, and they were happy about the Led Zeppelin part. But that band was Hiroshima, and then we quickly got rid of that name because everyone made fun of us. And my buddy John wanted to start his own band because it was just, you know, we were kids. We were both lead guitar players. It wasn't going to work. So we got a keyboardist, and we started a trio with the same drummer, singing guy, and we called it Riddler. And that was the band. Like for a minute we were Jack Sprat, that didn't go over well, but we were like the band everybody had at their Sweet 16. So we were getting hired all the time. So then we became like the school band, like the that got all the extra gigs besides Battle of the Bands. And we were called Riddler. And I think that was the only real significant high school band names. I mean, then there was like the first, like, we're in a band after high school. Let's try to get a gig in the city bands. And that's when my friend Joe and I from that band took it real serious and wrote our own music. And he became a bass player, singer, not a drummer. And our first band name was Trip Fantastic because we were like all psychedelic, like, you know, rock, late 60s, early 70s vibe. And we were going for bright colors and glitter. And then that band became a band called Mesmer because we were getting a little darker, a little more Bowie, a little more, you know, 70s glam. So that, and we stuck with that for a while. And we had like, and that name was a little more interesting. And then at that point, I stopped being in like, bands like that because I got asked, I had the opportunity to be in the band that I ended up being in for 16 years that was already signed and already established. And a lot of that pressure was taken away from me coming up with bad names.
So yeah, talk about then that transition and that band.
So yeah, we covered a lot of time just because I really played with a lot of people, like the same people early on. So like my first bands was all, I keep mentioning this guy who was always in the band, but then once we got out there and realized I met other musicians and I was working in a music store and this incredible, well, he's an incredible singer, songwriter, musician, everything. But the day I met him in a music store, he was just a super nice guy. And I was selling effects pedals before I was working recording. And his name is Jimmy Necco from the band, and the band was called Hours, but I had no idea who they were. And they just probably got signed in 97. And this was probably 99, 2000. I don't think a record was out yet. He was just this awesome guy who would like the same music. We talked about music every time he came in. And he, one day he was like, hey, I'm playing this coffee house. It's like doing some new songs. And I was like, all right, I'll come see you. And I remember just being like completely blown away. Like I never heard a human being sing like that in the same room as me, let alone like on a record or even a mote. And just the harmonic balance and the way his guitar parts were and the tonality and just like, it's like romantic mixed with darkness. It was like everything that I just kind of really connected to. And we were always acquaintances and became friends while I was working in the music store and his band was doing its thing and finishing the records. And I think before their first record came out, he's like, hey, come jam in the basement. And I went to jam with them and we had so much fun because I just kind of just felt like I fit in. And then they went on to do the tour and like two records. And then he was restructuring the way the band was. And he, that's when he asked, he's like, hey, do you want to be a part of this? And I said, yeah. I remember like calling like I'm done music store. No, I did it cordially. Like I, you know, I gave my notice and we were rehearsing and that was just like life just changed at 25. And at 25, when some musicians, when you have a good job, you're kind of like, cause you're still trying, you might've already been checked out, but I wasn't. And I knew this was where it was supposed to be. And you know, it's a lot of great stuff happened during that. But in short, the greatest thing is I found some of the most amazing human beings to spend 16 years of my life with, you know, traveling the world and sharing rooms and just there it's a brotherhood, brother and sisterhood, because we had there's a female in the band as well, but it's a family. And I've literally met the most important people in my life being in that band. So
you want to talk about that experience a little bit, you know, then finally like hitting the road with a touring band?
So that was something, you know, in my head, like I always wanted this. I mean, even before we got the point, like, hey, you want to join? He actually asked me once to come up on stage and just like the kind of open-minded, not thinking like this is what I do kid from New Jersey. He's like, yeah, we're playing in New York City. Do you want to play a song with us? You know, essentially like when a band says, hey, come sit in, play in a song that you know. But it was at Irving Plaza, sold out, which is like a 2000 seater or 1800 person venue in New York City. And I'm just like, all right. And I don't know if it was like a playful test to see if I could keep my cool. Like this guy's only back in the store, but can he handle himself on stage? But anyway, right away it happened. So I joined a band that's already established. So first of all, they had two records out. So within a month or two, he had shows booked at the Bowery Ballroom two nights in a row, back to back. And those were actually very well attended, if not sold out. And that was like my entrance. And it wasn't just me. It was another new guitar player at the same time, a wonderful guitar player that we called Locke if in his band credits, but he also goes under his birth name and other stuff, Richie Devletian, because he's also the guitar player for DMC right now. Great, great person. And we were basically unleashed on the world. And it's like two kids from New Jersey. And, you know, and we played those shows. We did some touring. That was amazing for me. And then within less than a year of joining, we were making a record in California and living in the LA area for about a year working on an album. And I was like, this is, and I knew at that point, like everything, like this is my dream, because my whole existence at that point was just to rehearse, play well, make sure I was doing what I was asked of, you know, in a sense of like, hey, can you come up with some parts? Or if I had to learn parts, because, you know, Jimmy's the kind of musician that tends to play everything himself if he wanted to, but he likes the experience of having people around him. And sometimes most people don't know a lot about being in a band or what it's like to be, you know, when you're young, you think, oh, I'm going to come up with everything. But, you know, a lot of times producers or the key songwriter will ask you to play parts. And that's something that's like a hard knock learning thing. But once you get into it, it becomes a great challenge and a great reward. And so it was learning your parts or coming up with your parts. And I was like, every day it's around music, 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 wake up, have coffee, do music. And the purity and the true excitement of me finding myself in that happened around that first year. And then we just kind of went on it. But then there's other things that happen when you're kind of on it. And the more years you're out there and the more shows. And I know that's another thing I brought up a lot in this podcast and we talk about. So I'll get to it, or I'll wait. I'll wait to.
Yeah, no, I mean, we can get into that, but I wanted to ask, like, you know, like how many albums then were you a part of with this band? And you said like 16 years was total, right?
Right about 16 years when I had to step back, and it was nothing dramatic. It was just that I was in my 40s and things in my life was changing. And we've had a lot of members come through the band in general. And since it's such a family and there's so much love and respect and support, you know, there was times where previous members, we were in LA, we had 11 people on stage for two songs once, because all members from throughout the history of the band were there, because Jimmy's an incredible human, as well as all the people he chooses to put in the band. So it's always a family first. So at that point, there's, you know, there's a lot of shifts, but I think I always lose count, but full releases, there was four full length albums. And then just to do how the business changes in the last 5-6 years, it's almost more interesting when you're, because now the band, you know, it's independent. You know, he would just take a group of songs that were being worked on and there's the right vibe. He releases them as like small, like EPs, and then albums would come out. I mean, there's even the more recent stuff that came out, even after I had to step back, was stuff that's been worked on for 6 years or so. So some of the stuff I played and some of the contributions I made are still there. So at this point, I'm on every Hours record since 2008. Which is, which that record was Valet the Boxer or Mercy. Mercy. I always screw that up. And then the second record I was on was Valet the Boxer, but Mercy was the last major label release. So pretty much anything from that band besides the first two records.
Nice.
As of now, the current band is incredible. And I really hope they're all getting back in the studio and knock out another record, because Jimmy's got songs for days. So, but as of this point, I'm on every record. And nice. Some of the solo releases as well.
Cool. So, so you kind of touched on it a little bit, and, you know, however you want to get into it, but it kind of leads into us meeting. Yep. You want to share a little bit about the other stuff?
Yeah. So that's important stuff, because the reason why I pointed out is just the clarity of like when I first got to be in the band and how pure and amazing and how I knew what I was supposed to be doing. And then the other side that was in my life at this point was, you know, that 4,000-year-old alien I talk about when I felt like I was in a 9-year-old's body and no one understood me. You know, when I was younger, I picked up drinking pretty young. I was like I think I had my first drink around 11 years old. Just found like the find in the woods drink with your friends. I wasn't like seeking out alcohol, but I remember when we found that beer in the woods and it hit my bloodstream. I was like, wow, this is the kind of lightning I need in my life. And, you know, it progressed through high school. I didn't have any obvious dependencies or problems or really no real wreckage on the outside world, but being sober now for a little over nine and a half years and working a program of recovery, the writing is all over the wall when you break down the behaviors of what makes somebody an addict or an alcoholic or the kind of mindset. So that was kind of happening through high school. I even tried stopping once in my early 20s, even prior to joining the band I was in. And it didn't really present itself as any real serious issues for my livelihood or being in a band in general. It started to really catch up with me about maybe I joined in 2003. So around 2000, 9, I really started to really hit it hard. And I don't want to say it was making the shows bad or anything. I didn't get to that point yet, but I was definitely chasing things I shouldn't have been chasing. And then what I would say, and I think if I was to analyze like month by month or week by week, my focus started to be, I would say, distracted. It wasn't like I didn't want to be in the band. I lived for it. But sometimes if you're just partying too much and you care about the party after the show, what you end up doing is you're not giving yourself the time to reflect on the show. You're not giving that self your time to realize, oh, I should play that part better tomorrow. If my mind was thinking like, all right, show's done, put the guitar away, I'm going looking for the party, I wasn't doing what I feel at this point. And I've also had the most amazing experience because I got sober in 2012. So I got to spend some time in the band sober. So I got to see what it is to put the guitar away, then hang with the band and talk about how, you know, reflecting on the parts and being professionals, because you're delivering a show to an audience that's paying money. And nobody else in the band had anything going on like that. Actually, I used to get a lot. They're like one of the best influences in my life. I mean, that's a band that wakes up, works out, jogs, eats well. Doesn't mean they're like completely like straight edge, but they don't have any problems either. They could pick a show 3 weeks down the line, a tour, be like, hey, you know, we're gonna have a little fun tonight. Meanwhile, I'm chasing some kind of weird, screwed up dream after every show every night. There was no more fun in it. So yeah, that guy never got away from himself to the point where then I started making a lot of bad decisions in my normal home life. And I end up taking like jobs as a, you know, when I'd be home, I would take cover band gigs or whatever I could take, playing sideman stuff that would be kind of out of any spotlight or anything. No, it was more about like, well, I get a few dollars and I get some drinks. And it was such a screwed up mentality. And I'm not knocking cover bands or that entertainment, because again, the really great ones do it professionally and they give you a great show, and they also get paid a lot more. They don't get paid in beer anymore. I'm just saying, for me, I was compromising what I believe, just to kind of do that. It all kind of came to a head in 2012, where I just woke up one day and it just had to stop.
And I remember. So for our listeners, we've met through AA Zoom rooms, being in part of the same ones, and struck up a friendship. But I remember hearing that story, and I thought that was kind of funny too, about like everybody in your band was kind of like, get up, work out, eat healthy, do all these things. And you were looking for the party and stuff.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that they're not, and I don't want anyone to ever think that they just are some kind of like, it was like some kind of odd cult or anything. It's just normal people take their life and their job seriously. And if they want to party on the weekends, trust me, that we weren't, you know, we weren't hiding from things either. It's just that when there's time to work, there's time to work. And if I'm so hungover that I'm not paying attention in sound check for new details in a show, then I'm not doing my agreement.
Basically, it sounded like, I mean, to me, that they had the emotional maturity that, you know, we addicts and alcoholics lack, that we have to catch up on. And they had already had it because they knew how to prioritize the things.
Absolutely. And Jimmy being around a little longer than me, he's only about 3 years older, but being in the industry already and older than some of the band like that, it's like having a really amazing big brother. Like, I don't want to call him a papa bear, but you know, he's also a father. When I joined his band, he had 2 kids. So he really was an amazing example and taught a lot of the younger guys in the band, like, kind of how to fucking grow up, plain English, you know, because I was kind of a, I don't want to say a punk kid, but you know, I only wanted to be a musician. I didn't care about anything else. I never thought I'd get married or have kids, or that stuff was on my, I was a little brash when I was younger and outspoken. And you know, he had the patience of what a big brother would do. And eventually I would grow up quicker. Even prior to sobriety, I would just learn how to be a better human on this planet by his example and the older guys in the band, because they just lived a different way. I can't even tell you how many times he's given rides to guys, you know, like when you're coming off truck stops and guys said he need food and sign. And we would start talking to him, and we always carried extra water and granola bars and stuff to kind of give people. And if somebody looked like, I just need a ride to my job, like some people would be looking for rides to their jobs and stuff, and this guy would just put him in a van and take him without even thought. And like, I understand that now, but when you're like in your early 20s from New Jersey and you're kind of sheltered, you just don't think like that. So he's a wonderful person, and that is my first entry really into how to think differently without knowing what sobriety was. Not that, because he said he had the emotional maturity.
Yeah, and yeah. And it sounds like he helped teach you how to think less of self, you know, and mm-hmm. think of others. And it seems like to me, like maybe he's like always seen like the good, genuine 1,000-year-old alien in you, you know, when he met you and
absolutely.
That's why he brought you in, you know?
Absolutely. Because I mean, in the end, I mean, if I could really get into all the gory details of my alcoholism, I don't really have that kind of story. I didn't really do a lot of bad. I didn't really harm many people. I didn't try to harm people. I mean, indirectly, we all harm people with our abuse. Yeah. Like the big one is I robbed time from my family if they were worried about me. But in general, I always had that helper feeling. I wanted to help others. You know, as a kid, I was diagnosed with learning disabilities. And I was really pissed off about it in high school. And they told me, well, why don't you go help the kids in the classes that are, now that I use the word developmentally challenged, back then I used special ed. And I learned right then and there, it's like, if you help someone else, because you went through it, you'll make you feel better. You know, I was really involved in my youth group with the church that my family grew up with that always had us going to soup kitchens and stuff. So I always had this structure, but you don't realize what it is until it kind of comes back around. That's why I always believe for young people having programs like that, that teach them how to just help others. Because it'll, even if you don't do it right away, you'll remember like, oh, yeah, little light, ding.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And then, you know, speaking of helping others and helping youth, like, so, you know, you decide to get sober and then you, like, how did the leaving the band work and then now getting into the stuff you do now with Road to Recovery?
So Road Recovery was a constant around the band, actually. There's a bit of a synergy there, too, because Road Recovery is also founded by two gentlemen that were in music management and working with bands their whole career. So their other, like, actual, like, their other more music-based company in the 90s was the company that managed the band I was in. So I was always exposed to Road Recovery. And the leader of the band, Jimmy, was always incredibly supportive because those are his bros, you know, how they help others. So we played a lot of their events and benefits, helping kids. And I was always around it and heard about it. So even in the whole structure of Road Recovery is entertainment industry professionals that have faced any adversity. It's not just about alcoholism or addiction. I mean, adversity could be how you dealt with your learning disabilities, dealing with anxiety, PTSD in adult life. You know, anything that you realize is going on, you can articulate it, and then you figure out a way through it. That's all really is. There's, I mean, adversities, we could list them forever. Everybody in this world at this point has faced some sort of adversity by being under some sort of lockdown situation. Your life drastically changed and we had to find a route. That's pretty much what the staff is comprised of, but entertainment industry professionals, originally mostly people from music. And then the young people that they work with, it's all at-risk youth or youth that are in these different situations that you could either be low income into alternative incarceration. Maybe they face addiction. Maybe it's a prevention program. Maybe it's just the town has nothing going on. We need to get kids off the street. That's really what the bulk of it is. And we don't teach music. We're there to elevate their voices and teach life skills. But since we're entertainment industry professionals, we use our skills as a way. So we bring instruments. But, hey, try the drums. But it's not like about learning the drums as much as it is about expressing yourself with the drums. And if you're getting a group of people together making this beautiful noise, you're now creating a sense of confidence where now we found a sense of teamwork. Opposed to if everybody came in as individual. And my buddy Buddha always says we came in at one. He's another from Road Recovery guy. We come in at one and we leave as a team, or we leave as a we, because the whole thing's power we, or we leave together. I mean, I can't paraphrase Buddha because he's the pitch guy. He's got, you know, he's like,
yeah,
it's like he's like a preacher sometimes in a good way. But he, not that preachers are bad, but like what I know when they say if you preach too much, you're not actually. I that was my recovery. That was recovery
with that thick New York accent preaching.
Yeah, you know? But that's a recovery trigger right there, because we don't want to be the bleeding deacon preaching. We want to be the elder statesman, and Buddha is the elder statesman. But anyway, the idea is we come together to bring some sort of structure. So we create agreements. Like if you're going to come, you're coming this week. Okay, so next week you're going to come. We're going to work on lyrics, and they say yes, and we put that as like our little business meeting section. So we're really there to like empower. And just let really what ends up being a large population of people that don't feel like they have a voice, like kids that either have hard home lives or hard street lives, never feel like they could express themselves. We're there just to allow them to express themselves. And we go in with principles over personalities. Our views mean nothing. As long as they're saying something that's not directly trying to harm somebody, we want them to talk about it and write about it. We don't try to curb their views. We just say, like, you know, there's lots of ways to learn. Why don't you find out everything you could learn, find out what you think, and then express yourself. And that's because the whole idea is, like, we want them to be like an unbiased approach to letting their voices be heard. And then the music part of it's just fun, because I mean, a lot of people love music. And if you get the opportunity to like bang on drums and figure out how to sing and find their what their spirit is. But some people do painting. Some kids just don't want to be on stage. And then we'll have them paint and draw and do stuff to decorate when we do the performance. Some kids find it more interesting when I bring the soundboard and the lighting. We give them that full experience. Like, we just don't like hire a sound company and they show up when we do a perform. Like we call them parties because they're finale parties. They're not performances. I mean, we are performing, but the idea is we're just going to celebrate. It's all like a tribal approach. We're just going to celebrate something. So when I bring that gear and we bring that gear, we go there early that day. So if there's young people that are more interested in that, it's not like just the sound guy going, shut up and get out of my face and set up. He's like, I'm like, hey, yeah, check it out. We're like, you know, sometimes I had young people writing, like working the light thing for me because they showed interest. So there, it's like, even when we're supposed to be doing a finale and it's supposed to be finishing, it's still part of this. We meet each other where we're at, power we experience that. We're no better than it. We're not above those kids at all. We learn more from those kids than they ever learned from us. So
yeah.
That was a really long explanation, but the name sometimes gets very confusing for people when they hear Road Recovery. They think like, oh, it's a recovery program. You know, maybe it's helping the people working there recover from stuff more, but the truth is it's an empowerment program for youth at this point. And then it might grow out of that.
No, it sounds like an amazing, I mean, you've shared with me all about it before. It sounds like such an amazing thing to be a part of, especially, you know, us when, you know, we learn that helping others helps us, like you said. But, you know, what, without like, you know, blowing anyone's anonymity or anything like that, like, can you talk about a story or like one of your most proud moments working there, seeing somebody when from day one and watching their growth and seeing them today?
I mean, I could think of many, but I'll pick one that was really current and it's on my Instagram. So there's no anonymity issues. So right around 2018, I would always be around for Road Recovery when they needed me. I did some stuff in 2013. It's like family, but you know, I got the call in the spring of 2018, and this is all about the synergy of life. At that point, we decided we weren't going to, I think Jimmy said, like, listen, we're not going to do a band tour this summer. I know my father is really sick and everyone knew I needed to be home with my dad for the summer of 2018. And he's like, I'm gonna go out acoustic if you want to, it's cool. If not, I know you want to be with your dad. And I'm like, I appreciate that so much. I found like a smaller gig, music directing, like a small musical, like, you know, Hair, like a rock musical is fun. It's like, you know, a little punk rock version of it in a black box theater. And I got the call from Gene and Jack from Road Recovery. And the reason I mention that is it's like when we're doing the next right thing, God or how you understand them or your higher power provides for you. And the decision was made for me to change everything I've done up to that point. I went on tour every summer. But that particular year, my dad was dying and I had to make the decision. And I did everything I can with, and then all of a sudden work showed up. And one of it was this new program they were doing in the Bronx. So I go into the Bronx in May of 2018 or June. And it was the first time I worked alternative programs that were from alternative to incarceration to people coming out of jail. So it's older teens. And then there's a prevention group upstairs of these kids just come, or young people. I keep saying kids. These young people come that are basically signed up to be there to stay off the streets and see there's other ways. And they have all kinds of programs in these places we partner up with. And then we're the once a week fun music program. And there was a young guy there who was already killing it on drums. We asked him, where'd you learn to play drums like that? He's like, church. And he would love when I set up the beat machines and all the equipment I would use. And he was just like a sponge and he was a sweetheart. And he was probably in his maybe 15 at the time. So he kept coming around and the program kept growing. And we moved to a different part of the Bronx. And now he's around 18 and he's like the right hand of us. Like he's setting up the stuff. He's showing the younger participants how to play drums. Like he's just a wonderful person. And I kept working with them. And then COVID happens and we have his email and he's doing the virtual programming with us. And he's now at this point, he's making beats. So I remember having an old beat making thing that I didn't really use anymore. So, you know what, Ralph, do me a favor. You don't have anything. Take this from me. If you get something better, please give it to somebody else. Sure enough, he starts sending me videos. This is back in 2000, before COVID, of him crushing it on the computer, making hip hop and all these things. So now that we're in the virtual part of it, he's coming in, Ralph, to the virtual meetups we have. And when kids want to do rap songs, Ralph is making them beats. And the thing is, he can make better beats than any staff member at this point, because we don't have any truly defined hip hop producers. We all could do it, but it's not like that was everybody's specialty. But when you have a young guy who's 18 from the Bronx, there's nothing going to be more connected to the MCs that are coming up. So we're just like, oh my God, this is so cool. And with virtual, he's making beats for kids up in Hudson, New York, for young people up in Oneonta, New York. So now we're watching all this magic. So the pride of the program, the pride of the power of we is just like, you just get so warm. But then we had a gala in September. Daryl DMC was one of the main, from Run DMC, was one of the main performers. And he came to visit the Bronx once when we were still in person. And I remember I'm like, D, do you want to play a song with Ralph? Because we were just kind of playing songs. Like, yeah, yeah. So Ralph slammed Tricky. I'm playing guitar. And we had this impromptu. So I told D, I'm like, when we do the show, I'm building the band for you. Remember Ralph? Can he play? Let's have him do drums on two songs. Like, yeah, it's great. So now I'm on stage in a sold out venue in New York City at a show. At this portion of the show is about the people like DMC and Simon Kirk performing with a professional band. But now that professional band consists of the drummer is Ralph with me.
Nice.
And I'm sitting here at the end, it was so much work. I'm enjoying it. And then as soon as the night was over, we took this picture together. And I'm like, this is everything. There's wow. He went, because music is really important to him. And he studies piano now and everything. Now he's on stage and he's a drummer in the, one-off band that night for DMC. And I was just
wow.
If that can't tell you how this could work, when, everything in life is what you put in and what you get out of it. But that's the power of we. That's what we do.
Because I don't know what his background was before he came into the program, but if he would have probably kept going a whole nother life path, who knows where he might have ended up, And now look at
it is true. And those streets are tough. Places like the Bronx, Ralph, in his best thinking, when he met us at 14, didn't want that life. But we know how it is out there. If there's nothing else to show somebody you could do something different, or you can, yes, you can be somebody else, or you could get out of the city, or you could get out of the Bronx if you wanted to, or you could go to college. You don't know where that puts you. Because all of us at one point in our head never thought we would do something that we would find unacceptable. So even though Ralph is brought up in his family environment, it's actually a very, it's one of the more, he's got a consistent family environment. He's got a life in church. He's got all these things that are trying to put him on a path, but circumstances are circumstances. When you're around it all the time, or actually the wrong place at the wrong time too. We're talking about a pretty tough area, very yeah. unfortunate area, with some of the most brightest kids I've ever been around.
Hey, baby, this is Double D, also known as Dream Daddy. And I gotta tell y'all something about our new sponsorship here at today's Boondoggle. And the name is Dream Nutrition. So if you're looking to empower your human vitality, well, then you come to the right place. With over 12 years of combined experience in cannabinoids and terpene products, Dream Nutrition products include CBD oils, patches, protein, and so much more. The endocannabinoid system is believed to have involvement in regulating physiological and cognitive processes, including the immune system, appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and in mediating the pharmacological effects of cannabis. Support this veteran-owned and operated company today, and today's Boondoggle fans will receive 10% off their orders when using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. That's BOONDOG10 at checkout. So go to the link. That's dreamnutrition.com/discount /boondog10. And remember, dream is not spelled like Dream Daddy. It's spelled D-R-E-E-M. And start saving today because you deserve to feel your best. And you know that's right. So tell them Dream Daddy and your friends from Today's Boondog sent you.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I got, you know, teared up just hearing that story. And that's the great thing about, you know, us being able to feel emotionally again when we hear, you know, God working in someone's life and that transformation, man. It's like we get to feel that with them too. I love it.
And you can't do this kind of stuff unless you make your own change. I mean, it's one thing that you have a good heart, and there's a lot of great people that don't have identified like I have with the stuff that I deal with, but I could never have done this selflessly. Yes, it's a job. So I'm not saying it's selfless service, but it's a job in a service world that if you're not wired right, you wouldn't do the job the same way. You would just clock in and clock out. You wouldn't be thinking about how's this kid going to get home from the gig? Who's going to drive him home to the Bronx? You're not going to be wired. Like, that's what makes everybody road recovery incredible. That's the whole staff is like that. So.
And it also becomes like a passion where it doesn't seem like it's really a job, you know?
Yeah. And it's not all I do. Yeah, it's not all I do, too. That's the cool thing, too. It's a part of my life now that allows me to still be a guitar player, a studio musician, a producer, have a studio. But it just makes, like you said, this makes you feel whole.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to be 7 days a week of just rock and roll. It could be 2 days of helping young people, 2 days working with other people in recovery, and then having the rest of the week to make the music. Cause you know, I'm 44 years old now. Like I'm not saying I'm old, but I'm starting to see there's a fullness to life that I never knew could be. Now I'm in a life beyond my wildest dreams. I got some of my dreams right at the gate. So now I'm in beyond wildest dreams part.
Nice. And now I know we talked about, you know, you recently started helping out a veterans organization. You want to talk about how that came to be? And
well, yeah, I'll get to that real quick. I'll kind of, because I'm doing a little bit just to be a support. I'm just there to help because a long time ago, this is something that called at me. You know, my family, I do come from a family that has had many, many people serve except for me and my father, which is kind of a funny detail. My father's story is a whole, he's not even here anymore. I don't want to talk crap on. He couldn't serve due to police record, but he would have told you that too. But he wanted to, but you know, they're from a different generation. And I grew up around, you know, my great uncle, who was a big guitar influence on me, was a veteran from World War II. He was in Patton's army. And we didn't know any of this till way later because that generation never talked about anything. And then when we really found out the extent of his experience, it was just like, wow. And then hear my mom talk about, yeah, Uncle Sammy's really, you know, we love, it's like, he's never really been married. You know, he wasn't really right after he came back from the war. And I didn't really know what that meant fully because I was a young kid. And then my dad's brother was actually a medic who knocked his principal out and basically signed into the army at 17. My grandma signed him in the 40s. And his first assignment was in reconstruction in Tokyo at what they called back then was a war fatigue hospital. So as I start getting older, I start asking questions about the plight of what, you know, as you get older, you start to understand more. And then we have the other uncle who was a Vietnam vet. Again, not a generation that really talked about stuff. A horrible experience for a Vietnam vet is the way they came home. It's literally, that's the thing, one of the great stains on our society is the treatment of that veteran population, you know, and, that and hearing his story and seeing him not having some stuff go on. And then I'm from like a weird era of growing up in the New York City area in the early 90s where no one ever talked about it. It was like, so I didn't really think about service right away. And then I had my own life going on. But I always knew, like I always had a deep respect and just really wanted to be able to help and just know that like, you grew up knowing you thank someone for their service, especially if you see them in uniform. I mean, you might not know your story. Like if I met you off the street, the way you're dressed today, I wouldn't know that's part of your story until I know. But you know, but the cool thing was even the band was brought up like that because even the band members all had family that were in the service. So we would have things where we would meet soldiers on the road and some of them would even know the band we were in. And you know, just be like, hey, come to the show, get CDs. And we went on tour with a band, Filter, that we actually got to play for a large population that was able to come from Walter Reed, I guess, the hospital in D.C. And then we played a bass in South Carolina. And it started to really click in the mid-2000s. I'm like, there's more to this. I need to start to stop thinking about myself and realize there's a whole bunch of people who choose a life that allows me to run around in tight pants and eyeliner acting like a jackass. I have that freedom because of a lot of men and later on women's lives that have been at the ultimate sacrifice. They didn't come home. And then whatever the people who got home, whatever they left behind emotionally or... And once I got so right before I got sober, I played a party of a gentleman returning home from Afghanistan through another friend. He said, hey, my buddy's coming home. We want to have a coming home party. Can we put the cover band together? And what do you want for it? And I said, I want nothing. And I was still drinking a lot. It wasn't really, but I knew that much. I thought we were going there to celebrate, which we were. He came home. It's amazing. But the part that never connected until that day was he had I'm calling it a film strip. What is this, like the 80s? Like a slideshow kind of presentation, just honoring all his friends that didn't come home because that was an important part of this party. And I was just like, you know, like when someone's just like, fuck, like reality just hits. It really made me think, and lots are taken up here. Thankfully, I got sober shortly after that. And then any way I could at that point, I was trying to find a way how I could help. So if there was a way I could help, I could. If it was simply if someone's like, hey, we're doing a benefit. You want your music? Can you do some music? What do you want? I would be like, nothing. Sure, let's do that. I worked with the United Way in Bergen County for a little bit. They would do veterans homes. They would build affordable housing. And the word affordable housing is like, people think like, oh, it's like, basically they would find a way to create housing in places when veterans would come home, they could go back and start their lives again after giving up so much of their life. When everybody else gets to make a nest egg and build a base in the towns they grew up in. Because why shouldn't you be able to go to the community you grew up in at 35, 40 years old when you retire? Or 28, depending on how your time is. Another guy posted, we're going to go clean graves. So I called clean graves and anything I could do at this point. And then Buddha got me involved. We did a song for a CD that they do one for veterans in Westchester County. And we did a version of Wish You Merry Christmas. We recorded the whole thing. We donated it. He did the performance. I wasn't available. And that's like, that's cool and all. And I think it's great. Everybody should figure out a way. But I really, you know, when Mike Duty from the Ultimate Sacrifice Foundation posted on Fox, I know that guy. And then I saw him post about it because we happened to be connected through social media. We never really talked a lot in life. We don't really know each other in a fine way. We know each other from social media, and I played his party. But I said, whatever you need, I'll be there to help. And there's nothing I could really bring to it. When I said to him, I could bring my technical skills. So right now, he sends me videos, and I fix them up for him. And I'm happy if that's all I do, if there's something there for me. But it lets me know that I could do that because I need to. And I personally want to figure out more ways that that there could be more stuff to help. And I do believe the awareness needs to come out there a lot. And maybe it's just me growing up and, you know, saying like, wow, I didn't have any call service or duty when I was younger, but I know a lot of guys like me now that are either sober or understand freedom and love it, that now at 44, I want to make sure I can serve those who serve the best I can. And whatever way I could be a friend to the veteran community, meaning like whatever there is I could do to help, I want to figure out. And I also want to find other people like you that have that passion because you're on that side of it, of what we could come together with to help just either bring awareness or bring structure or programs or support groups. Or if guys are dealing with sobriety issues, like I want to be there. Like, hell yeah, let me focus on that. Or if dudes just want to learn how to play rock and roll, I'll do that too.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's definitely been like what's helped connect our friendship virtually, you know, is just that passion that you have for veterans and, you know, us both walking a similar journey. And we've even said how like much the similarities there are like to touring, being a touring musician and somebody that, you know, goes and serves.
I think that's something that, you know, and this is something that I think a lot of musicians, especially that really did it professionally and tour and stuff. And like, again, when I say this stuff, the first part that has to be truly acknowledged is there's the main factor of what happens when soldiers get deployed. We have nothing in common with. We're never even going to try to make like that. It's not our situations aren't dire. So I don't want to ever belittle what a soldier goes through. However, a lot of the things that make us tick, a lot of that, there's a lot of similarities, because in later life, I have a very good friend that is a vet. And when we talk, take away the fact that you guys had a call of duty to go serve our nation and defend our freedom, take that part away. And that's where your honor will always stay. And that's why I will always thank people for their service over and over again. But when we get into like the brotherhood talk, there's so many things that are the same. Like the brotherhood, like coming together with a bunch of people, and those are your people. You know, you're so focused, you're so connected to the purpose and the mission that no one cares about who fell asleep with their shoes on. You don't think about where. If I had stories, how many times I slept in all my clothes, I don't know where I've been. Like it's like that getting in a van, no matter what's going on, going to that next show. You could be tired, beat up, whatever, and you set the gear up, and you're just like you get into the vibe. We know what the mission is, and then once the adrenaline rush of actually having the performance. And there's also, I mean, this is like a neurological thing more so than saying like, and again, there's no correlation to the experience of what anybody's went through in the service and what a musician goes through on stage. But the actual ability to be thinking, to be reacting to whatever's happening, that doesn't happen in many fields of work. It happens in that world. It happens in music. It might happen with doctors and any other kind of first responder situation where whatever happens, you have to respond to and go with it. You could be on stage, your amp could blow up, and you're just like, okay, I got to plug into another amp because the song never waits. And again, because I know you have a large veterans community, by no means am I comparing or belittling the experience of what any veteran goes through in combat. But I do feel there is certain things that make us all tick in a similar way. A lot of musicians have ADHD. Which they don't, it's not a bad thing. Everyone thinks it's a bad thing when you're in school, but that's a mind that's meant to respond to any situation when it comes up in an intent, like without thinking, but being able to just do it, which helps you as a musician. The song doesn't wait. The show doesn't wait. Whatever happens, happens. Break a string, keep playing, grab another guitar. Again, I always have to keep repeating that. I don't want to belittle the experience at all, but I think that connection, after everybody comes home and wants to expand their friend circles, I think there's a lot of ability to relate and just to get that camaraderie and that to really understand certain things, especially if we're talking about getting guys involved in a recovery program for people who are struggling with addiction or alcohol. I think those two groups are just an awesome group. And I don't know any musician that's never wanted to step up to say, hey, go play for some soldiers. We used to try to get involved, but we weren't in a big enough situation where we could be going in the USO right away because we weren't a well-known enough band. Not that we were upset about that. But you're not going to send a band no one knows. Like, you guys deserve a great show. You got to know the band. Like,
we took anything, man. We just wanted to be entertained and distracted, you know? So
yeah,
it would have been cool. Well, you know, I know, unfortunately I got other obligations. Not unfortunately, you know, I mean, I get to go serve and be a dad and stuff, but I know there's so much more stuff I wanted to talk to you about, and maybe we can do a part two sometime.
If you think that's what you want to do, I'm here, man.
Awesome, man. Appreciate it. But before I let you go this time, let me ask you a few of the questions that I normally ask.
Okay.
I guess that I have on here. Who are your top three musical artists?
That I love now or in general?
In general.
U2 is always a top of my list because they've been with me the longest through all my phases of life. Wow. It's a tough one. I can't answer that question so easily. It's a bad musician thing in me. I love all kinds of music. So my constants, U2, Peter Gabriel, and Ozzy. You know what? Because even when I fall out of my hard rock stuff, Ozzy's been in my life my whole life because my mom gave me my first Ozzy record. So he's going to stay there.
Nice.
I mean, Ozzy Sabbath, anything Ozzy touched, you know.
And then is there a particular song that you feel has inspired you in life that's like a, you know, go-to anytime you're going through a rough time? You can just, you never get tired of playing it, always, or listening to it.
Acrobat by U2 off the Atung Baby record. Not everybody really knows it, but it's just got like a pulse that it's serious. It gets starts off somber, but it has a groove that keeps you going. And then the chorus hook is "Don't let the bastards keep you down or drive you down." So that's, I mean, the song might not be exactly about that, but if you're just in a bad funk and you say "Don't let the bastards drive you down," it's like, okay, I gotta get the hell out of this head, you know.
And then what class do you feel should be mandatory before graduating high school today?
Anything that involves reading Thomas Paine, the founding of this country, understanding what freedom and liberty is, maybe even the ideology without trying to quickly attach a title and name to it right away so people could feel it in their hearts. Yeah, whatever that class would be called. I mean, and when I was a kid, that was just called history, and we learned it. I just don't know what's being taught now.
Yeah. And it's a whole nother episode we can do together, I think. And then three people who've inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today.
Like that exist beyond my life or people I know personally?
Yeah, people you know personally that have inspired you or you can credit for making who you are.
Making who I am today. Well, I got to say my father. He was a man of honor and principle, and he also gave me common sense from Thomas Paine at 14 years old. But other than that, he was just a guy. He was a very good teacher, everything. So he inspired me to the person I am today. You know, Jimmy from the band I joined. There's so much about the man that he is, being a consistent father, raising kids while in a band and taking care. I mean, again, these are people that just, they do that for others. And, wow. Today. That's an interesting one. There's just too many. It's tough because why don't I have a third? Do I not really have a third?
Probably you know have plenty, but it's hard to narrow it down to one.
Because this third one has to deal with recovery so much. And there's so many people that have come in and out of my life in recovery that have been incredibly important. And it's hard just to name one person. So I'm just going to say Bill Wilson.
There you go.
Because whatever answer. Bill created has given me some of the most incredible people in my life to, you know, so.
Yeah. Amen. That's a good one, man.
But that's not fair either. Cause it could be Dr. Bob too, but we'll start with Bill. Cause I know he kind of.
And then favorite toy as a child.
Legos.
Awesome. And then I know we've already kind of talked about them, but any message that you have for our military that's currently serving overseas?
Well, the message starts as thank you from the bottom of my heart, and that nothing, your choice is to serve and, like I said, protect the freedom of a nation that allowed someone like me, crazy, wearing eyeliner and black jeans, running around the world playing music, and then allow me to have a place to live and grow up in. That's the greatest, I think it's the greatest nation in the world, is something you should always be proud of. And no matter how things turn out, there's a lot of us here that might not be obvious, even where to look, that want to be here to welcome you back. Thank you again, but help if there's anything we could do. And I'll say if I could do, we'll keep it about the I, but I know there's others like me that really, really, truly appreciate that choice that you guys made. And girls. I say guys, it's like the ultimate, like everybody, but
yeah.
Guys and gals.
So. Gotta watch our pronouns these days, right? But awesome, man. Static, I appreciate having you on. I'm glad we were able to do this. I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but like I said, I mean, you're always welcome back anytime, and definitely have so much more to discuss. Now, if anybody new in the audience wants to know more about you or follow what you're doing, like with Road Recovery, or even at your studio, which we didn't really get too much into, where would you send them?
Well, I guess we could use Instagram. I don't know if we're going to type it on the screen or not, but I got to look up the Road Recovery one. If they want to know I cover everything on my own personal thing, which is Static Is Noise is my Instagram handle, just like Static Is Noise. And then I think Road Recovery might have an underscore, but you could just DM me too, and I could send you. If you have questions, if this is how we talk today, this is not just a follow. This is like reach out to me, and it's Static Is Noise on Instagram, and just hit me in the DMs, because there's so much going on. I mean, we totally forgot to talk about like this hosting things on like Clubhouse and all these different things. And
written down, but
fine. We don't have to promote it or anything. Yeah. It's the idea is like so much is going on. So just hit me there, and then I'll help direct. Cause that's another great thing I learned in recovery was I could just be someone that shows people the way. I just like being a tour guide or an usher at this point.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can relate to that. Awesome, man.
Cool, well, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And then real quick, before I let you go, you mind cutting a promo ID for the show?
Sure. What do I got
to
do?
You just introduce yourself, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Hey, everyone. I am Static, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Awesome. All right, brother. Thanks a lot, man.
Good stuff, man. We'll talk soon. Have a good ride.
For sure. Bye-bye.
You will always be alone. They will never love you. You will never rest.
story brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
You and I were sitting in the back, and they're going through the freaking...
When we took over the stewardess job?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I remember you guys, you were passing out the drinks and the peanuts and shit. Yeah.
Well, it was a non-alcoholic flight.
Yeah.
Which was only, it was just a little hot.
Except for you guys.
Well, no, I told her, I said, we'll pass out the drinks, but our crew gets a beer. She goes, okay. Well, then she knew there was like 15 of us on the plane. She kept opening up beers. How many more? I go, about three more. How many guys are here? I said, about 15. So... We gave everybody else in the plane ginger ale, Coke, whatever, and a bag of peanuts or pretzels, and all of the ACU2 got freaking beer out of it.
What was funny is we had this kid, he was about 15 years old, sitting next to us in the back, and they brought this kid a beer, and the kid goes, I don't know if I can drink. Shut up, just drink it, man. So, by the time we landed, this guy was so sauce, man. His mom and dad were waiting on him. He's drunker than a skunk, man.
Kid gets off the plane.
Scoodly doodly doo. Mom, I want to join the Navy.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com, for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.